Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
To the rap, hip hop.
Bringing voices to power.
In this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I talk with Laura McCauley, president of the Huntsville City School Board of Education. Laura McCauley is a native of the city of Huntsville. She's a product of Huntsville City Schools and a 1979 graduate of Johnson High School. She is a proud mother of four children. She was first elected to the Huntsville City School Board as a member for District 1 in 2008 and was re-elected in 2012. As a result of the 2008 election, Laura became the first African-American woman ever elected to a municipal office in the city of Huntsville. She has a Bachelor of Arts in Religion, an Associate's Degree in Applied Science, a paralegal, and an Associate of Arts in Pastoral Ministry. Laura was selected as an Alabama All-State School Board member. It is the highest honor a local school board member can achieve. Also, she has achieved the status of Alabama Associate of School Boards Master's Level Board Member for three consecutive years. Lori is also a small business owner. Good afternoon, Ms. McCauley. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Just trying to keep up with everything. You know, everything's going on, and locally, the state is just so much going on, and I'm glad to see people in education trying to teach the next generation to stay in school and to learn all you can know, because really, even Malcolm X said it, without an education, you're not going to get far.
You got that right.
Okay, tell us about how did it feel being the first African-American to achieve that position?
Well, African-American woman.
Yeah, African-American woman. That's right.
Woman. That's the important part, too.
Yeah.
it's really humbling because, you know, you seem to carry the weight of your entire race on your back. You have to conduct yourself in a way where others can see you and understand the intellectual knowledge that you bring to the table. You know, but also it reveals a lot to you about how still women are treated differently than men. Because in politics, it's a man-driven pretty much profession. And there's been so many times, you know, how you sit at a table and you could say something and everybody keeps, you know, just huh-huh. And then when a male say something, all of a sudden they say, that sounds like a great idea. And you're thinking, didn't I just say that? So it's humbling, but it's still a great honor, and it's not one that I take lightly.
Yes, and myself, I see you doing a lot of things in the community, and I want to congratulate you on that. But I know, it's like you said, you carry the weight on your shoulders, and the first thing everybody think you can do is please everybody, and you can't please
correct
everybody. And just by saying that and knowing that, as soon as somebody is displeased or unpleased, then they're going to make a whole lot of noise. Now, I was go ahead.
Go on. No. You're absolutely correct. The one thing I think the public sometimes get twisted is that a school board member priority is creating a better educational journey for the kids that they have in the school system now, that's coming through the school system. And long as you know that you're doing what's best for children, then at least I can sleep at night and I can look at myself in the mirror. And sometimes I think adults don't really understand, or they understand, but it's not their priority, is doing what's best for children, but what's convenient for adults. And sometimes those two things collide.
Yes, that's very true. Now, I keep up with the papers online and hard copies, and I've seen where you had some detractors, mainly people out of the Huntsville chapter of the Alabama Voters Coalition, but the New South Coalition, which I used to be a member. I was a member of that coalition, and I didn't always agree with what they did. And I just want to tell people, dig more into the issue before you take somebody else's word on it, and to approach the person. I mean, if they want to know how something was done, they should ask you about it instead of just taking. Now, I respect a lot of our organizations out there that's been around for a long time, but these people don't have the final say. And when you become a part of any organization, not just Alabama New South Coalition, but when you become part of any organization before a long time, you get into this playbook of how things are supposed to go. And the way the playbook works, it's not always right for the people. It's right for that organization. So people need to really, you know, just take it on face value and ask the person about it. Now, I had a situation, if I can talk about it, I had a situation where they lost all credibility with me because I was on the screening committee And on that screening committee, we endorsed somebody else. And the only reason why we endorsed that person, the County Commission District 6, over there with Bob Harrison, is doing so much damage. And we had the ear to the streets and the grassroots wanted Peter Proctor Jr. And so we talked to him. We knew his name was buzzing in the grassroots. We talked to all the candidates, and he had the best vision, and the screening committee was unanimous. 2 days later, they came back and overturned it and voted.
Wow.
Didn't tell anybody there was going to be. No, they did this, and that's why I left. You know, I started out, when I first got my feet wet into politics, it was through Alabama New South Coalition, the Huntsville chapter. And I appreciate everything that they did by bringing me in, but I lost all faith in them when they just totally overturned the screening committee's selection and then called a vote without letting none of the screening members who endorsed Mr. Proctor was even notified that they had a meeting. It was like an emergency meeting, and they had a vote from the floor, and they overturned it overnight. And look at District 6 now. So I lost all credibility with that organization. So I know they're out there been making a whole lot of noise about the work that you do, but there are a few questions the grassroots would want to know. Just tell me about how it felt with you being a Johnson graduate and then Johnson being lost on your watch. You know, some people say that you didn't do enough to try to hold on to it. And I just want you to get your opinion out there because I really don't know, you know, deeply about that situation. That's just one of the things that I've always asked. And why did she fight hard to keep Johnson and this and that? And I said, well, you know, and I was asked this months ago, even before we talked about doing this. And I said, I was going
well,
to ask you about
it. I love
it. So,
the opportunity.
What was your opinion on?
I love
on,
Well, it was not my opinion it mattered. It was the fact that was in front of me as a board member. And what this the closing of Johnson did not begin under my watch. The closing of Johnson actually began in the 90s. It just came to fruition under my watch.
Uh-huh.
Now, Johnson, since Johnson has been on some academic deficiency list, for lack of better words, because it's been called different things over the years. But according to, I think, the conversation I had with a newspaper person, Johnson has been on some kind of failing school list since 1995.
Uh-huh.
But that is not the driving force. The driving force that got to be enrollment. That was the number one thing. And when Johnson closed, it was less than 20% capacity. Those of you who are listening, who knew the building and who had the experiences of Johnson High School, would understand this. We closed up the whole top floor of Johnson High School, and it still was not capacity. We moved everything on one floor. It was a building built for 2,500 kids at one time, and they were down to 500. The utilities was running the school system almost $30,000 a month. So, the you know, finances will enter the equation after so long. But it's not because the students are not there. There are around 1,420-something kids who live in Johnson High School area who are supposed to be there, but they were not there. They had opportunity to transfer because of the segregation court order, the No Child Left Behind, the failing school list. There were three or four different ways they could transfer out. And you couldn't really get mad at parents for exercising the option that was presented to them. So as a result, though, out of the 1,400 kids, only 500 were attending school in the community. So the community started, the board started speaking about closing Johnson in the 90s. There have been several proposals through several superintendents to close Johnson, but it was never acted upon. Because I think that at that time it was premature, and there was always a chance to save her. Uh-huh. Then what happened was what we refer to as Alabama Accountability Act. And as you know, and I guess some of the people I want them to listen to and do their homework.
Yes.
The Accountability Act, out of 1,300 schools in the state of Alabama, the 74 or 73 that were listed were all predominantly black. Mathematically, that's not even possible. That one predominantly white school was not in that formula. Well, what it did for the high schools, because each level had a different criteria, Marcus, on what it means to be clear or what it meant to be failing. So you look at the high school. So the high schools, it was based upon the graduation exam at the time. So you got to think this was 2013 when this bill was enacted. And you know what? It was done overnight. You know how it passed the House and the Senate in one way, went in the conference committee, and in 8 hours it came out with 27 pages, and I think it went in with 8 pages in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But what that bill done was put the 14 high schools that were listed as failing in a quandra. And what it said was that they will be deemed failing according to the last 6 years of test scores. And the state assessment at that time was the graduation exam. Where our state came in and said, we're going to now transfer over from the graduation exam to the ACT as a state assessment towards high school. And so what that was, so that was school year 14-15. So you had 14-15, 15-16. 16-17, 17-18, 19-20, because when you norm something, you have to have at least 5 years of data to norm. So what the board was looking at was that Johnson and Butler, because Butler, they were the two that were on our list, would be deemed failing until the state had normed and come up with then the benchmark for the state. Well, the second part of that bill was you had to go by the last 6 years a state assessments. Well, you didn't have any for the last 6 years because you were frozen while they were norming. So you had to go looking forward 5 years, and it was somewhere around the 2024-25 school year. We were looking at that no matter what we done, Johnson High School and Butler High School would stay on the failing school list. And this was in 2012-13 when we were looking at almost 15 years, well, at least 12 to 15 years up the road, if everything went perfect. And then we said that the board decided that the best thing for North Huntsville was to close Johnson and to close Butler and let the community start over.
Yes.
Now, you know, it was not to say that Johnson was not a great school. It was not to say that the graduates there were not worthy of continuing on. It was with the concept or the intention of giving North Huntsville a new beginning. Now, that was one of the hardest decisions. And what I can tell people, if those who were there, that I think that was the only meeting that I can recall in which I was emotional. Because people, they think, okay, she allowed this to happen. It was 4 votes already cast before they even got to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
that goes back to
deal.
What you, yeah, and that goes back to what you're saying. It's so much weight on your shoulders. People were thinking that somehow you could overcome all those votes.
No, and because David Blair was the president, and he had already said motion carried. Because if you're the president and you get 3 votes, you really don't have to finish the count because that's quorum. Now, that was one of the hardest decisions I watched the board take. And as a board member, even if I don't agree with something, once it is the board decision, it is your decision. You know?
Yeah.
And that's hard, too. That's hard to, you know, to do, too. Because you'd be saying, okay, I really didn't agree with it, but it was the majority of the board, so now it is the board position, so now it is now your position. And you don't
speak against Yeah, and you have to carry it out. It's your duty to carry it out. I mean, what do these people want? You just to be a disruptor and just cause confusion? The best thing you can do is, once that vote carried, the best thing you could do was to do the best for Northwest Huntsville and that area for the future, once the vote had carried. I want to take one quick second out. Since we're talking about schools, I'm going to give a shout-out to Shanita Pitts Foreman. She's a classmate of mine. 89 classes trying to get together over here in Lawrence County. We've lost a lot of people in the class of 89, and, you know, due to wrecks, due to diseases and different things happening. And we all just trying to get together. It's very important. Your school, high school life is one of the most important times of your life. And we're glad to have Shanita back coming in from Virginia to visit us. And all of our 89 classmates, I encourage y'all to get together and have your reunions on time. Now back to what we were saying is, once the vote carried, I mean, there's nothing else that you can do.
And see, and what they realize is that Johnson, the closing of Johnson and Butler were included in our desegregation order, consent decree. And it was never a vote to specifically close Johnson. The vote was to accept the consent decree from the court. That was not two separate motions. That was one motion. And so, and even with Butler, that was included in the consent decree.
Uh-huh.
And so the consent decree, though, you know, and this is, I want to say this, though, Marcus. I wanted to make sure that my alumni understand that sometimes, you know, no one can take your legacy. That's what I wanted to say. You know, we always going to have our memories. And we're always going to have different things that nobody can ever script from us. You know, we all remember the things that we did at Johnson, the experience that we had. No one could ever take that. But at the same time, my job is to make a better life for the kids that are coming through the system. And at the time, the board feelings, and that's one thing that I did agree with them, and I still do, is that we have to do whatever we have to do to make sure that the lives of the kids that we have in District 1 now are better than what we had. You know, we have to make sure that they have opportunities that, you know, that any other kid across this city has.
And
you know,
that's
and not the, okay.
No, I was just going to say, and that's what you got to do. Like you said, the school had, this process had started before you got there, and it had gotten to a point, like you said, with the enrollment and most likely the conditions of the school, it would be, you know, a good idea to start over and to start better than before. Now, people got to think about this too. Even though they graduated from Johnson, I mean, Johnson is not the very first school there. There's been a lot of schools lost, and a lot of that is due to time and different circumstances, like failing and the condition, the structural condition.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to accept that the school is going to come down, the school is going to close. But that's not the end of it. Think forward. You got to think forward. You know, you can't keep trying to hold on.
Well, I just think that some of my critics are trying to put the closing of Johnson solely on my back. And to me, that's not a good portrayal, because some of the people that you mentioned earlier, and I'm trying to get a copy of it, they wrote letters to previous superintendents asking for the school to be closed in the 90s. And see, I just
read
one of those letters recently. And so I'm saying, you know.
They're doing it for political reasons. That's the only reason why they're doing it. They're doing it for political reasons right now. You got a few people over there trying to play try to play kingmaker, and some of them have decided if they don't like you, then we'll find something. Hey, well, she let Johnson close, and then here you go. They'll start piling on, and next thing you know, they'll be the ones coming up with a candidate, encouraging people to run. But
they're already there.
They've been there. Yeah, they've been there. But the thing I want to say is, people are going to have a whole lot of questions, but when you have people doing misdirections like that, like laying it solely on your back, that doesn't do, the public any good. What you need to do is
and
have a
is
discussion.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In what I have proposed, if they tell the truth, I met with alumni on several occasions, even though they have selective amnesia. And I would say to them, okay, what about this? What about this? What about this? And but what was still on the table and what the superintendent has agreed upon, and we haven't, we are speaking to artists now, is doing a mural somewhere in the New Jemison with Johnson, some events from Johnson in there to let them know where they came from. So the board is not cold-hearted to think that we just, you know, we disrespecting the community. We do we respect the direction that you have charged us to go, and that's forward with our community. Now, let's talk about the good things and the successful things that we have done. The graduation rate over here in District 1 has gone from 31%. When I was elected, it was 31%.
Uh-huh.
And it's gone from 31% to 85%. Then the scholarship offers have gone from $300,000 to $4.1 million. Then we, for the first time in, I think, almost 15 years, last year, every one of our primary schools tested academically clear.
Yes,
so
I've seen that.
Education, see, the job of school board members to improve the education. And see, they can debate my personality, but one thing that's not debatable is my accomplishments. You know, and we've had schools over here, and the parents will ask me, you know, when are we going to get new schools? All the other parts of the city was getting new schools. We got one quarter of the city that every school is new, every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we haven't had a new school in District 1 since the 60s.
Yeah, it was time.
You know, and we're about to get, we're getting three new schools, one totally renovated, and the other one had a new theater, got an $8 million theater. But we, out of the $200 million that we had for new construction, over $125 million came to District 1 alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's talk about moving forward.
Yeah, okay. And that's what should be on everybody's mind. I mean, you can easily attack anybody's process on how they do things. You can easily attack how you feel, how someone acts, what really is just your perception. But let's talk about how has the education improved. I mean, that should be your line of attack, not that a school that was failing and has some structural issues was closing. That's sort of reaching. That lets you know there's something deeper here besides of the job performance. It's not the job performance that they have an issue with. They got an issue with this particular school closing. Now,
and we talk about industrial partners. This is the first time we've had industrial partners. When this school opens up on August the 3rd, every career academy, except for two, will have a signature industry partner. We have Siemens. We signed an MOU with them for the cybersecurity program. Then we have the College Academy. And the College Academy signature sponsor is UH. And what they're going to do is that when they graduate from Jemison High School, they're going to have 60 credit hours at UH. And UH says that even though there'll be freshmen coming in UH, that they're going to there'll be juniors coming in UH, they're going to treat them like freshmen and get them four additional years would be the equivalent of a master's degree for free, tuition. So you got a parent who can look at it.
Now that is good.
You know, you're not talking about that. And see, and in our court decree, it says at least 25% of them must come from McNair Junior High. So the community now is protected to have a representation in that college academy. You know, so, and it is a magnet, so therefore it must reflect the demographic of the school, of the city. So you do have that. And for the first time that I know of, we had over 200 applicants for 30 slots of people of all diverse backgrounds trying to get to North Huntsville. And particularly, I said to individuals, I never known two whites that wanted to come up to North Huntsville didn't have to come. And now we had over 100 trying to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you have to have something to draw them. And that's what a magnet intention, the intention of a magnet is to draw them. Then now we have advanced manufacturing, and we're in discussions with NASA, and nothing has been signed yet. But we're talking about internships with them, and there's three printers that print some kind of titanium, some kind of heavy steel. In the southeast corridor of the United States, there's three of these printers. Two of them will be in Huntsville City Schools. One is in Jemison, and one is at the new Griffin that's coming online later on in 2017.
Uh-huh.
So our kids have opportunities that kids across the nation don't have. We have Green Power USA Racing, and our kids get a kit. They do pre-engineered design. They design. They do advanced manufacturing. When they build a race car, ran off of electricity, and then they're racing. And they're competing with people across the nation now, and even overseas. Some of our kids on the international team. Our first international race is scheduled for November the 12th, and it's being held at Jemison in North Huntsville. So that's going to bring economic development here because you got teams coming from London. One is proposed to come from China. But we have schools in Utah, California, Florida. I forgot the other states that now who have joined Green Power USA that will be coming here. So I was saying to some of my colleagues, now I'm rebooting the economic development here in North Huntsville. What are you guys going to do in the areas you were elected to complement it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And that's one of the things, too, we need is along with these improving grades and getting new schools, we need some economic development to complement that. And let me take you back for a minute when you were talking about cybersecurity. I just wanted to ask you, do all students have access to the Internet, and do they have their safety protected while on that Internet?
Oh, all the kids have access to Internet when they're in on our grounds, yes.
Okay.
And we have enough filters on them on our system. But, you know, kids are quite smart and sometimes smarter than we are. And if we discover they have gone around some of the filters, which sometimes you have some of those, and when we find them, we put them in cybersecurity. But they learn how to do that for a living. But in a good way.
That's one of the things that I had some of the people in the grassroots ask me was they was concerned about the cybersecurity, and that's very hard to do. I mean, even our government at the top levels get hacked. So I can imagine how much of a strain that is keeping up with that in a school system. So,
what we have a program called Dino, too, that's in the classroom, and I don't know if the public is familiar with. And what that does, it allows the teacher on her monitor, she can take control and see the monitors of every student in her class. So if they are not on task, if they're playing games, or they're on the website they shouldn't be on, she should see that on her monitor because it takes and shows her every monitor is in her classroom.
Okay. Now, I'm going to take a break, and on the other side of this break, I'm going to ask you about, is Jemison going to need any new money for the school football program, and has any other new schools received any funding or allocation for money specifically targeted for their football program? We'll be right back after this three-minute break.
dedicate this song to little Junior Park, a cousin of mine that's going on, but we'd like to kind of carry on in his name.
Okay, we're back in this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, and we're talking with Laura McCauley, president of the Huntsville City Board of Education. Now, before the break, I was asking you about the athletics. I played a lot of athletics in high school. I played all the sports, and a lot of times we didn't even have funding for certain equipment and all this. I really hated that because the guys really loved, especially our baseball program. At Lawrence County High School was having some problems in the late 80s. I just wanted to ask you, is there any, what are they going to do about athletics? Are athletics going to be taken care of at Jemison?
Yes. What we did for football, band, the school system purchased their uniforms for them and all the equipment. We've even recently we changed our board policies that now that the school system replaces all the football helmets. You see, you know
that's
how they used to be the responsibility. Yeah, so now the school system does all these things. Because Jemison is a new, brand new school, we knew that the band needed new uniforms. I think that they're getting about 100 new uniforms that they don't have to fundraise and get. The football team, I know they got all new equipment coming. The basketball team had new uniforms, and boys and girls, we've ordered them all new stuff starting out. So they're really positioned fairly well. there may be a few things that we didn't get, like we don't purchase their cleats and stuff like that. So they may do a little fundraising, but the vast majority of everything they need, you know, has been provided to them.
That's great, because like I was saying before, it was hard for the Booster Club to fund all these different sports at Lawrence County High School. It was very hard. They had a struggle, but they kept football funded and basketball got funded. Things
you know,
like
yeah,
baseball,
they have a soccer team.
Very tough. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jimson has soccer too. They have robotics now that they hadn't had in a while. And they have a Cyber Jacks robotic team that competed for the first time in first robotics. And out of a field of 54, I think they came out at 32, which was good for the first competition.
Yes.
And
who are they working with that? When it comes to the robotics, who are they working with? They're working with Calhoun with what they got going over there. Or are you working?
No,
with
we
the,
have
a, working
we
with
have
a different
we have our
school.
Own teachers.
We okay. 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 Yeah. I thought it might have been some collaboration with some of the colleges around here.
You know, one of the representatives from SAIC was saying that the cybersecurity that Jimison and Humphrey City Schools is presenting is going to challenge the colleges now to up their game, because they're going to be leaving high school almost into their junior year, what some of these colleges are offering. You know, currently. So there's going to be a lot of push for that. You know, because the cyber, they said it was over 20-something thousand jobs across the nation last year that went unfulfilled. And our kids that are in cyber right now are going, they're getting internships during the summer, you know, even in their sophomore and junior years, you know. And Hump Utility mm-hmm. seems to be picking up most of them.
Okay. No, just give us. I'm gonna ask you. I'll throw a couple of subjects out there and just ask you your take on it. What's your position on uniforms?
Well, my position on uniforms was I wanted it to be a parent decision. Well, really, let me go back. Under the previous superintendent, there was a motion in front of the board to go the whole system to go uniforms. Well, the school system did a system-wide survey, and I think it was 69% of the parents across the entire system that wanted uniforms, but we couldn't get the three votes. Now, Alta Morrison and I, District 1 and 5, were voting for it, and then the other board members were saying that, oh, they don't know that they would felt better if it was 75%. And we kept saying, well, we respect the minority, the 31% who said no, but we asked them to respect the 69% to say it, yes. You know, but we could never get it passed. And today, in our consent decree, in our segregation consent order, it's not a decree now, our order, it says that it's all or nothing. So, right now, it's nothing.
Okay.
You know, but we do know the behavior, the incidents of infractions decreased. A lot of the picking on and bullying, according to what the teachers and the principals are telling me, were they'd all declined.
Now, I never went to a school that had that, and I can remember some things when I was in school that happened to some people. You know, I never did like that, but I've always agreed with uniforms. I think it does cut down a whole lot of mess. I mean, people might not like it because you have some people, you have parents that they make this kind of stuff, you know, happen. I mean, you got a kid that's not doing as great as they can in school, but they got some $200 shoes on. And some of these parents are running around doing that. I just think it's a disgrace when they do that. And what about the other kid? He may be very smart, but they're going to regret going to school when they having to wear the same pants every other day, you know, things like that. And that has a lot to do You're going to see instances of bullying go down. You're going to see grades go up, too. I'd be willing to bet that grades are going to go up in those cases. But you have some parents who, and kids really, really don't care. They would accept it because everything is like a fad. When everybody's wearing the same uniform, they're not going to be upset at all about that.
With
the
some
parents
of my
are the ones going to be upset.
Well, you'd be surprised at how many parents, even from the fluent community, were saying that they want a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Because I sent it to voicemail. What they were saying is that then they didn't have to fight with their kids about what to wear the next morning. You know, and so it was convenient for them as well.
And they also would save money.
Yes, and they could spend it on other things. You know,
yeah.
But it was just a complex issue that there was no majority or consensus to move forward in one way direction or the other. So the courts kind of made up a mind. They didn't say that we couldn't have uniform. They just simply say it's going to be all or nothing. Yeah.
Okay. And I guess this is another contentious issue. What about, give me your view on allowing non-certified Teach for America teachers in Title I schools.
Well, they are certified. Because one thing about it, the local Board of Education cannot certify a teacher to teach in the state. Only the state can do that. So the state gives them what they call an alternative certification, but it's still a certification. And what may happen is that if I graduate, say, if you graduate with a history degree, but you did not come through the Department of Ed for history, you went through the history department, then you would have to petition the state to give you an alternative degree. That doesn't mean that you don't have a bachelor's in that content area. It just meant that you didn't come through the Department of Ed. And now we have... not Teach for America teachers, but what they call adjunct teachers now, that the state just passed that law, that you can hire them in specialized courses like cybersecurity, advanced manufacturing, things that you that's not really a teaching degree for, and bring them in to teach these courses. So there are some needs for them. So far, we don't keep teachers Teach for America traditionally formed. Not for them. Traditionally, taught or not, if they're not effective. In Huntsville schools, we're equal opportunists. If you're not performing, we're going to get rid of you no matter what you come in our area under. But the ones that I see, they have done, the ones that have remained who have just recently got tenure, they are effective teachers. They go outside the classroom. We had one that reestablished the wrestling program. He started the cap and gown to take kids from the Title I community to colleges across the nation, particularly in the East Coast. He took them to the Ivy League schools so they could see what that's like. And then he also takes them to HBCUs and then those in state and out of state. So, you know, they are doing extra things. They're sponsoring our robotics. They're sponsoring some of the things that are necessary, but that doesn't mean that they're any better than any other teacher. It just means that I think that we need to evaluate every teacher on their own merits and not just give them a label and say, oh, you are Teach for America, so they must mean that you're inferior. And I don't think that's fair to that teacher, and I don't think that's fair to the students who we have the job and the obligation and the responsibility of putting an effective teacher in every classroom, not necessarily a highly qualified, but a highly effective teacher.
Yes. What do you what about these people saying that you can't get in a board meeting and really speak your mind without being harassed and intimidated?
Well,
I haven't seen anything like that. So I was just a lot of the questions I have come from the grassroots.
Well,
so I'm just questioning, but I haven't seen.
That's an interesting question. Let's go back to when I became president, I changed the format. So these people may not have been, They may not have been at the board meeting in the last 2 years. You know, now previous there was contention, and you used to have to write your questions on index card. One of the employees would read the question to the board, and then if you have a follow up question, you had to write that on the index card. And so, you know, I felt that it was taking up a lot of time. And one of the things I did when I became president, I did away with those 3x5 cards. And I said, let the people come to the mic and ask their own questions. Now, what we say to them and what I always say, ma'am, please state your question. And what we do is if the item is, say, I'm going to use one of the items I have coming up on the July 14th meeting. It'll say the MOU with Huntsville Police Department. And now, after the presenter presents the information to us, whoever it may be, they'll present the information. Then the board members will ask all their questions. And after the board members get through asking all their questions, as the president of the board, I turn to the audience and I say, do any one of you have a question on this item? Come to the mic and ask your question. And they ask questions and they interact. Now, sometimes they may not like the answer that they get, but they have an opportunity to fully participate, and we're televised as well. We're one of the few boards whose meetings are televised. So you don't even have to come down there. You can sit at home and watch it on TV, and then after our board meeting is over with, either the day, within the 2 days of the board meeting, we post all the PowerPoints that were presented to us on our website through eBoards, so they can go back if they missed and see all the documentation that was presented to the board.
That's
what I say. That's interesting. I don't understand, you know, if that person has not been there in the last 2 years to see that the format has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's changed, you know, and see what you see now, and it's a more effective running board. You know, we're trying to be as transparent as we possibly can be. We'll never be transparent to the way some think you should be, because transparency means different things to different people.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, you might want to, because some people want to go in executive session with you when you're discussing hiring and firing people. We're discussing real estate deals, and you don't discuss real estate deals in the public, because once they figure out you own the property, you being the school board, they try to hike the price up. Some things are done in conflict and done in executive session, and those things
have
good name and character.
A certain order.
Yeah. And so other than that, I think we're one of the most transparent boards, the school boards in this entire state. Because when we go to conferences, they tell us that we're one of the few boards that allow citizen comments at the spare of the moment. At our second meeting, they don't have to turn in to us what they're going to say. They don't have to validate what they're going to say. And most school boards won't allow that. So this issue of transparency is according to what that person perceives as transparent.
Now, let me ask you this. Will Speaking Out News be endorsing in this race?
I don't think Speaking Out ever endorses.
Okay, they will have a feature on all the candidates, right?
I don't know.
I mean, I've seen one of the issues of Speaking Out News, and they had Councilman Showers right there on the front, and they said after 3-4 decades, he's still willing to serve. I mean, made it sound like people were just begging him to run.
Transparency. They allow you to submit your own write-up. So there's full transparency. Because, even with my campaign, when I did my kickoff, now, there will always be opportunities. Speaking Out is a business. And if you pay for an ad, they're going to run that ad.
Oh yeah,
because you're gonna have your disclaimer on there that you pay for that ad, so nobody comes back and upset at them. It's something that you may have published.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. I just wish that we could be more together, because it just seems like if you make the wrong person mad, I mean, they'll turn their whole organization against you. I mean, yeah. they'll fuel the fire. They'll add in a few half truths and some sometimes outright lies to the situation just to inflame the people, because they don't like you themselves. So they will convince the people following them and trusting them. Really, it's an issue about trust. Just like I said when I was on that screening committee, it's all about trust. And people trust these organizations, but these organizations are not acting in the best interest of the people. They're acting in the best interest of the people running those organizations. Because, like I said, back when I was there, even when Parker Griffin was running for mayor, they didn't even want to talk to him. I mean, I was like, let's at least hear what he's got to say. And the first thing come out of their mouth was, I mean, it was like, what is Parker Griffin and his money going to do for us? I was like, he didn't say anything about doing anything with his money. He said he was running and he would love to talk. But the first thing come out of their mouth was something about money. And so, like I said, I appreciate coming through them. And I was the person who established the 21st Century Youth Leadership Movement for Madison County. Went down there in Selma and went through the training camps. And we took 3 kids down there, I believe it was. And I went for 3 years straight. Like I said, they did a lot of good work. But when they overturned that thing right there, it really turned me off. And with me as being a grassroots activist right now, I just don't give any credibility to Alabama New South Coalition. I just really don't. Well, and shouts out to the people that go there and do the work, you know. I'll come back when they get better leadership. But yeah. going back to what I was talking about, how well, and can you tell me some memories that you had of Dr. Dawson? And then we're going to get to how people can contact you. First, tell me some memories, some good memories or a memorable moment that you had with Dr. Dawson. And then tell our listeners how they can support your campaign and how they can contact you.
Okay. One thing that I do remember about Dr. Dawson, and he was an advocate for employees and teachers. And I remember that one night, I remember he went into the new Grissom, not when the new Grissom, but it was Grissom High, and someone told him to come down there and see the carpet in the state of that wing. And he came back, even though Grissom was not in his area, he fought for Grissom to get a new wing at their school. In which some people may find it interesting, but he did. He fought for Griffin to get that new, and they did get it. I think they called it the iPod back then. What I remember about him is that he wanted to make sure that employees were treated right, which is a good thing. Those are some of the things that I remember about him. I remember he was strong advocate for HEA. And AEA, and he tried, you know, to the best of his ability, to make sure that they remained strong and had a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how can our listeners and everybody that want to support you, is there a website, and how can they contact you to get involved with your campaign?
Well, it's not my website's still in the middle of construction, but okay. The best way to contact me is through my Facebook page, and
okay.
It's McCauley on Education, and that's how you can find me, McCauley on Education, or you can go to Facebook and search Laura McCauley, put politician. One's my personal page, one's my political page, but
okay.
If you put the politician or McCauley on Education, you can reach me directly. And you can get to see some of the opportunities that we got going on. And what I need the community help is believing in our kids. Because one thing I can tell you is that when I visit the schools and I visit the SGAs at Johnson and Butler, they would say things to me about why do people talk so bad about us on the news or talk bad about us, and they were talking about the elected officials, because when we say failing schools, the failing schools, the failing schools, we hurt children.
Mm-hmm.
And what we should be saying to them is that we believe in you guys. You know, we believe that you can do anything that you have your mind to do. Now we have this equity that our in facilities, equity in facilities, that our community has been waiting for over 50-something years. I don't know if you are aware of this, but this consent decree, the Sonny Hurford versus the Huntsville Board of Education, was initiated in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And so here this is 2016, and we just not getting a pathway to unitary status. And with that pathway came a lot of division, because Huntsville was allowed to settle, and everybody drew the line in the sand about what's going to, not my community, not this and not that. But now it's time for Huntsville to act like the one city that declares that it is, and to make sure that no matter where a child resides, they have an effective teacher in every classroom and a quality education. And that's what this consent order does. It brings equity in the classroom. It brings equity in facilities, equity in transportation, and equity in course offerings and extracurricular things. So what I challenge us to do is to watch the board. Now, just don't blindly follow us, but make sure we're doing everything we said we're going to do, and make sure we're following that consent order to fidelity. But you have to know when things are done. You know, we got to make sure it is followed to fidelity. And I share this because in 1980-something, I do remember that, and I know Dr. Kayla was the superintendent, so I don't know exactly what year. Johnson High was supposed to get an aerospace academy. They had the curriculum set up, but it never happened because we were not vigilant as a community to know what the consent decree said, when we were supposed to have things. So other than the superintendent, I'm the only person that said in every mediation, and I know that consent decree inward and outward, because if things are not followed, it is my district that things won't be as successful for.
Yes.
So that's why I weigh so much, too, because when I cite people, policies, procedures, timetables, it's because the lives of my kids truly depend upon it. And you got to do it, you know.
Yeah, you got to do it. And somebody's got to do it. I mean, you can do one thing by sitting back and playing Monday morning quarterback and not even knowing the consent decree and the steps you got to follow. You got to educate yourself and educate your kids as well. So I just say keep up the good work. When you're doing something good and you're being successful, you're going to have a lot of people throwing rocks at you, and they'll pick up things. I don't want to say insignificant or small, but they have got to. A smart voter would not just focus on Johnson High School being lost. That hurt everybody. Everybody's hurt.
It did.
You,
I think everybody
else
hurt.
But you got to focus on what now good are we doing? Look at the grades, and you got to look at all the bright side of it. Everything is not going to go 100% perfect. You just got to look at the bright side and focus on your strengths and your future. That's what you got to do. And the reason why they're going to focus on this. Uh-huh. Yeah. They're going to focus on that. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that District 1 is not like any other district? We're the only district that we have students in all 38 schools. No other district across this system is like that. Because all our kids, they have options. They exercise options. We have kids in every school across this entire city. Not just as president of the board, but even as the representative for District 1. I must have a relationship with every one of those other board members, because sometimes it's necessary for me to go over into their area to see after someone who resides in my area.
Yes.
And so it's different, you know.
Yeah, it's a heavy burden to carry, and I commend you for being willing to carry that and willing to take those arrows being shot at you. We just need some economic things to happen in District 1 because, you know, with the increased grades, the new schools coming, the next thing we
clear
need
statuses.
Now.
Yeah.
We've got the statuses clear. And the next thing we need now is some economic development, and I see District 1 is being
roads.
On its way.
Yeah, and just one thing, a boy, the realtor, told me that District 1 is 8 minutes from downtown, and with all the development going on downtown, you will start seeing that urban sprawl come our way. You know, and less than 50% of the families over here own their homes. So there's plenty of opportunities for people to come in, flip houses, redevelop subdivisions, and make us, you know, we can be competitive for any quarter of the city. But we have to first believe in ourselves. And we have to first stop speaking ill of each other and stop being, seeing that, you know, being so critical to the point where we're no longer cordial to each other. And what I challenge your listeners to do, if they have a question about any procedure that the board has done or any position that I have taken as your board member, you can call me. You can on Facebook. I meet people all the time at Starbucks. You know, I am one of the most transparent board members, and the parents can tell you that. Now, the people who don't have kids in the school, they might tell you something different. But the parents can tell you, my phone started ringing at 6:30 in the morning and sometimes rings to almost 11 o'clock at night about parents with these situations. And I invest about 40 hours or more a week in this service. Now, I know I traditionally don't agree with Bob Harrison on anything, but he is quoted as saying that when he was running for in the primary, running for reelection, that because this area has so many challenges, it takes a full-time public servant to meet all the challenges of this community. Now, that I do agree with him on.
Well, I want to state for the record that I don't agree with Bob Harrison on anything. I can't even find if the day was Sunday and we both were standing at the pulpit and he said today is Sunday, I would not believe him. I just find him one of the most corrupt, and I just don't think he's good for African-American leadership. I just don't. I just know too much about him. I've had too many political dealings with him, run-ins with him, and I feel for District 6. I feel for District 6, and he's went back on so many things. He's got all these investigations, all these audits, all these questions, and when he came in, he said that if he ever got caught up in anything like that, like Prince Prayer, that he would resign. He should have resigned about a year after he got elected, because that's about when it all started. So I really don't even trust Bob Harrison at all. So I'm on that note, I'm going to take another break, and then I'm going to come back and ask you the toughest question that I got, which is about the closing of the Fletcher Selden Alternative School. Before I take this break, I want to ask you, this is just my question, what does the school board do about, and this is coming from me, what does the school board do about dropouts and trying to get them back in? Do y'all have any kind of outreach program, or what do y'all do to try to get people, kids who have dropped out, to get back in? Now, I know y'all have, like, truancy officers. I mean some of the ones who maybe 17, 18 dropped out before they graduated. Are y'all trying to reach out to them, or have y'all just thrown your hands up?
Now, what we try to do when we find out they have dropped out, we try to refer them to Drake. We refer them now, Dr. McBride. I can't think of his first name. It may be Lester. He's opened up a school for dropouts to try to help them get their GED. So what we do, we collaborate with entities that we know that are working on those areas. We tell them to go to Calhoun. We contact them and try to refer them to someone else if they don't want to come back to school. And it's according if they can come back to school. Some of them, because the state law only allows you to go to school for 5 years for high school, and it's mathematically you can't do that before your 19th birthday, I believe it is, 19th or 20th. You have to do that. So you can't, if you can't make it in that time frame, then that we'll tell you, okay, you know, Calhoun has a GED program, so does Drake, and now Mr. McBride, and I forgot the name of his private school. We'll try to get you someplace, because we understand that without a high school diploma, your opportunities are very limited. You know, so we do reach out to them.
Okay, before this break, I'm going to read off to you. I want to get some answers on and give you a second to think about it. Was it a good idea for the board to close the Fletcher Selden Alternative School and outsource the program to a heavy-handed private drug and behavior treatment center? And how is that center being held to accountability? And who are they accountable to? And what type of oversight is going on there? And are parents getting information about the program in a timely manner in case they want to protest? And any students sent to this program, are their legal rights being protected? And is this center helping the school to prison pipeline? I'm going to take this break, and I'm going to get your answers to that on the turn of this break. We'll be right back.
All right.
With Laura McCauley, president of the Huntsville City School Board of Education.
Love and happiness, yeah, something that can make you do wrong, make you do right, yeah. Love, someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, talking about how she can make it right, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah.
Bringing voices to power.
Okay, we're back. And we're talking with Laura McCauley, president of the Huntsville City Board of Education, who's fighting in an election to retain her seat. So at the turn of the break, we were talking about the closing of the Sildon Center. And Ms. McCauley, could you tell us a little about that, the decision to close that center, and just what is the nature of the replacement?
Well, the Sildon Center was closed, I think, before I got on the board. I don't remember that at the early stage. That was on a different board and a different superintendent. But I know.
Yeah, I was just asking. I just wanted to know from you, was it a good idea?
Well, from the data that I have now, yes. See, what is actually done, Pinnacle is who you're referencing. We have had more students that graduated and got high school diplomas now since we've changed over. Now, you were asking me something about
the oversight
part of the question.
The second part of my question was like, where's the oversight? Who oversees them, and who are they accountable to?
Okay, stop right there, because that's got to answer one question at a time. They're responsible to the Huntsville City Board of Education. And they are also included in our consent order because if we decide to switch to another alternative school, they are now accountable to the court. So they have to report their data to us, and we have to report their data to the Department of Justice. So, yes, they are accountable now. They're accountable to the school board, to the Department of Justice, and as well as the community in the city of Huntsville.
Okay, what about legal representation for the child or the parent? Who represents them?
Like if they have a disagreement with them?
Yes, if they go to this alternative school and let's say things don't work out or some more problems go on there, and like you said, reporting is going to the courts, right?
Yes.
So if reporting is going to court, the kid or their parents need to be represented in some type of way for their own protections and questions.
Yeah. And see what they can do, because we have had this. Some parents have decided that they didn't want their kids to go to Pinnacle. We cannot force you to send your kid there.
Okay.
Child,
so the school just can't come in. That's one of the main things I wanted to clear up. So the school just can't come in and say, you're going to Pinnacle. Parent has to sign off on that, agree with it, or something like that. It's just not something that the school just can't place a kid in there. Then all of a sudden the school has placed a kid in the justice system.
Now, the only way you can even get to Pinnacle is if you have been expelled from Huntsville City Schools. You go to Pinnacle in lieu of expulsion.
Yeah, okay. That clears a lot up right there. For me, it does.
Yeah, so if you're not expelled, then you're not going there. But if you are expelled, or if you go to state correctional facility, in-house, like a Mount Meg or something, then you have to go through Pinnacle as a transition to come back in. But just your average Joe Blow, we can't walk up in and say, no, you going to Pinnacle.
Okay.
You have to be expelled first.
See, that's some of the illusion and that's some of the mischaracterization of this place is people thinking that the school is sending people there. Then from there, they ship them on to the prison industrial complex. Mm-hmm. And I, for one, I don't know much about this Pinnacle. But I did. I was a supervisor at Three Springs Residential Treatment Center in Cortland, Alabama, mm-hmm. for a year. I was a second shift mm-hmm. supervisor down there. And sometimes there are some kids in some cases who, and we had success stories, who this is going to be the only way to get them on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
So you just can't be totally against, but any parent and any citizen has a right to question these type of
right.
private organizations. But
see,
I've seen
and
I've worked in it where there can be some
success. They have a licensed child psychologist on staff that our children have access to while they attend there. That, you know, that we couldn't make them do in public school, but they have that opportunity there. And the parents, many of our parents take advantage of it. Because the ideal is to try to get to the root cause of the misbehavior and not just, you know, just send them there just to go through the motions.
Yeah, and to just babysit them away from school
right.
or something. They actually get
mm-hmm.
something out of it.
Yes.
Okay. we just about done got down to everything, and you responded very, very well. And I like the responses. A lot of questions have been cleared up, and the one we just asked about the Selden Center was the one that I was concerned about, and that, and mainly the outreach to dropouts and things like that. Now,
mm-hmm.
as other things that I've seen, I want to ask you, what's your take on all the violence we've seen in this school, and not just Huntsville, it's across the country. But what is your take on all these fights and students filming it and sending it? A lot of these things look like they're staged. Like people have told their peers, "I'm going to go fight such and such, get the camera."
You know,
what is that?
We had that when we was in high school, but we didn't have the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we said we're going to meet you at break, and
mm-hmm.
everybody said, "Oh, at break, they're going to."
Everybody was there.
And everybody was there. You know, sometimes they would say, you know, when I went to Johnson, they said, "We're going to meet you on Colfax." You know,
So does that make you want to? What about the cameras? The phones. Phones are allowed in the schools, right?
Yes, but see, the thing is, we allow the kids to have their cell phones. What we ask them to do is not to display them or use them during class time and during instructional time.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly because most parents want to be able to reach their kids after school or something like that and for emergencies. So
yeah.
you never be able to confiscate them all, and it costs you more headaches than what it's worth.
Yes.
And most of our students do comply with the request not to use the cell phone during school. But there's always a minority that, you know, you tell them go left, they're going to go right.
Yeah, somebody can ask to go to the bathroom, then go in the stall and use the phone for a few minutes.
You know. but it's you know, and I think that what is happening is our culture, we're not teaching kids how to settle their differences in a civil manner. And
mm-hmm.
that every time someone makes you mad, don't mean you hit them. You know,
true.
So we have to go back to looking at how we're rearing our children, how we're teaching them conflict resolution. And that begins even with adults, because we have to learn to be civil with one another when we don't agree with one another. So we need to model the behavior we want our students to adopt or follow.
Okay, what do you see in single parent homes? What do you see out of those students? Are they doing well? Do they fare well? Or do they lag a little behind? Or is just a mixed bag? It could go either way.
Well, you know, I was a single parent.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So what I can say to people is that my children are where society said that they should never be. You know, because they came from a single parent home in a dysfunctional family. I divorced my ex-husband because he got strung out on drugs. So everything that society said they were not being successful, they were successful. What I see now for single parent homes, male and female, is that we have challenges that are uniquely upon single parents. And it's different when you don't have that helpmate with you. But if the community helps with those kids, and we see every child as our child, I can see us continuously move forward.
Mm-hmm.
There's roughly Do you know what direct certification list is?
No. Direct certification list?
Yes. Well, in the school system, we don't ask for free and reduced lunch applications right now anymore, because it's direct certification is a list of students that DHR sends to every local school system. And it says these students are have some kind of case with us, food stamps, welfare, Medicaid, or something. But these are our clients. We have verified their income. So we don't verify because DHR always tell us that you're at poverty. And I say that to say this about District 1. 81% of all our students in District 1 are on the direct certification list from DHR.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say the poverty is not real and they're lying to the school system, we're not asking them. We're dependent upon the Department of Human Resources to tell us. And I don't think they're too much lying to them. But poverty is real. And with poverty comes, you know, with poverty comes challenges. With those challenges come committed people. We need to be more committed to our kids than we are with the differences that we have among each other.
That's and true. That's very true. And it makes a lot of difference in a child's life, you know, when two parents go their separate ways for whatever reason, to try to come together and be on one front when it comes to the child, when it comes to their education and their mental and spiritual stability. You have got to. Now, as for myself, I know DHR deals with food stamps and like that. You need that. But I'm kind of weary of DHR being involved in people's lives and their broken relationships, because I have never heard a success story come out of DHR. There is no success story. Someone is always end up damaged. Feelings are always hurt.
Piece of work now.
People are always hurt, you know, and a lot of this is done because of, you know, it's an adversarial system. Reuniting families and bringing families together is not their stated goal. That's not their goal. So
I know their goal is
not to repair the family.
Yeah.
So
right.
And so there's a lot of damage there. And I just always, and coming from an Afrocentric perspective, I just don't think African-American, anybody really should. Because like I said, when you got Title IV matching funding coming in from the federal government to the local and state organizations for every case
they
get, Title IV funding. That's when it's under the Social Security Act. But for every dollar that's written, not paid, but every dollar that's written on a, for instance, a child support order, that local organization DHR, they get $5. So there's a lot of money to be made in matching Title IV funding. And I just think that you just can't really trust them because they got too much money to make in these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you get some support orders so graduated. Now, what I know some people that's paying $900 a month for a nine-month-old child. What nine-month-old child is spending that much money? So you take that $900 and you multiply it by five, you got a whole lot of money coming into these state organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And but child support should be increased gradually as the child grows up, mm-hmm. as they, you know, consume more, do more, mm-hmm. get in these growth mm-hmm. spurts. It should go up. And
mm-hmm.
I just don't think that they should have it like that. I one of the biggest things that hurt people, and especially African Americans, because I know it's across the board. Because I just had a guy on the Child Support Hustle Show that's on this network that's on Saturdays from 5 to 7, and I let the ChildSupportHustle.com and this group come on and do this show because there's been such a big outcry. And it's Dr. Carlos Rivera from New York, and he talked about his case. You know, they they encourage and they facilitate parental alienation. A lot of this, people don't know. I mean, this destroys people. Some of these people don't care anything about the money. The only thing they want to do is have a fruitful relationship with their kids. But when you get into these DHR cases, you can't even mention anything about visitation in there. They will tell you to go get yourself a lawyer. They will not even let some of these parents bring up the idea of talking about that. You got to go outside and handle that, even though you're there, but you're supposed to be there in the best interest of the child. So why visitation is not in the best interest? So, and I know DHR, they, like I said, they help a lot of people. You know, child support is a welfare recovery program. It's to recover the welfare that you have received. And I just think, as far as, and we can get into this too, since we're talking about like poverty, people, I never agreed with, like they do in Huntsville, but they do it in a lot of places. A person in public housing can only have an overnight guest 14 days out of a year. How is a person supposed to develop a relationship when that person can't even come over? Now, I know it's government and this person shouldn't, you know, but they kind of got themselves in some type of pickle here, where you can't develop a strong relationship, because whether it's male or female, if that person, he can use that or she can use that to go out and cheat. Hey, I got to be out of here. I'm not supposed to be here anyway. And they go off and they spend it somewhere else.
I got issues with it.
Yeah, they should have.
Living together, not marry anyway. So we ain't going to go down there. Finish asking your question to be about school.
But see.
Because I have an issue with single moms, because I think that if you're a single mother, you shouldn't have another man staying the night at your house. That's just Laura McCullough's opinion. You know, because I see too much happening, not just with adolescent girls now, but adolescent boys. And I just think that when you are in the role of a mother, you are also their protector. And so to create an atmosphere that's respectable, that one that you would want them to go up and model when they get older. But I have a meeting that I got to get to in about 30 minutes. So you have anything else you need to ask me, Mark?
Okay. Now, the last question I want to ask you, and we'll wrap up the show with this. I was getting ready to ask you is, what do you say to the people who say that you sold out to the status quo and you're going along just to get along?
Well, see, that's a good question, because I asked them, if I've asked somebody, well, what did I sell? What did I sell? In order to sell something, you have to have something that an individual wants. So what did I sell? And so my thing is, you're just repeating that narrative. What I have done is I've been the most successful black elected official for as bringing additional resources to their community than anyone else has ever been. You know, I brought in over $120 million worth of reconstruction, jump-starting the rebuilding of North Huntsville. I've gotten the graduation rate from 31% to 85%. I've gotten all the primary schools now academically clear. You got the scholarship offers up from $300,000 to $4.1 million. And then even with the feeding program, we adopted the community feeding program under my watch. We have fed over 1 million meals to kids, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, many that come from my area. So I tell them, look at all the good that I have done in the community. I've increased the quality of life in the community. So I don't understand that narrative. I know who started it.
Yeah.
He ought to be ashamed of himself, because they're bullies. You know, and they bully and they strong on people, because they don't have it their way. It was somebody, you know, who said that these individuals, now I won't call their name, if North Huntsville was to burn down, they wouldn't care as long as they were king of the ashes. You know.
And I can just, without mentioning any names, I know who I would label that as.
I'm not going to label them on the air with you, but listen,
and I don't even have to because they know I know who they are, and they know I have said who they are on many occasions. And I'll, if that person, if the shoe fits, then wear it.
But let me finish, they're
welcome to come on the show and talk about it. But with that, we're gonna wrap it up with Laura McCauley. It's been a great show, and she has done a lot for the community.
Let me finish with one more statement. I wanted to say then is that to me, it's more than just about the new facilities and everything else. It's about all the new opportunities that I've brought to the district and all the industry partners. What I want them to say about Laura McCauley, and if they don't know for sure for themselves, they haven't had a conversation with me, and they haven't researched my record on their own, independent of what others may say. Mm-hmm. I'm asking you to sit down with me. Do your homework and see that, no, I haven't sold anything out to the community. They elected me to go improve the education in District 1, and that I have done.
Yes. And we appreciate your dedication and all the work you've done, and you just keep on keeping on. And
okay.
I just want to say for the record, anybody that wants to come on the show, it takes, I commend you for coming on. A lot of people don't want to come on because I go kind of hard sometimes, but I'm only here to ask the questions that the grassroots is asking. So if you get upset by the questions I ask, then you're mad at the very people you call yourself representing. So anybody is welcome to come on the show. And I definitely would love to have that scoundrel on the show. I'm not going to call his name. Let's let him be unnamed. Him and I know who it is. But the scoundrels, and I can definitely prove it on the one-on-one conversation with them, and that's why they won't come on the show. But good luck in your election, and I'd love to see other candidates come out and come on this show so we can get to some of the real questions people are asking, and we can get through all this fog people are putting out there. Just look at people's records and do your own research. It's good to follow and be a part of these organizations, but do your own research also as well. And don't never think that the people at these head of these organizations, or even me with this talk show, know it all. And it's going to give you what you cannot find on your own. You can find the information on your own if you're willing to look. Don't sit back and let somebody spoon feed it to you. Go out and find the information. Check what I say. Check what Ms. McCauley say. Check what anybody that's running for office has to say, and then make your own informed decision. It was a great show, and I'd love to have you back sometime. And good luck.
All right, Dean. God bless you.
God bless you.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap.
Hip hop.
The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. can catch the Child Support Hustle Show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power. Bringing voices to power.